Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer, your host for this week's show. After months of no rain and minimal snowfall over the winter, it seems like the eastern prairies will finally get some May showers. But is it too little and too late for livestock producers? We'll talk to a rep from the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association to learn about the water shortage on many ranches on the prairies.
And I haven't talked to anybody who's comfortable with the moisture situation. I've been talking to somebody from an area, you know, west of Prince Albert, who's talking about hauling water. And that area is generally challenged by too much rain too often. So, no, I don't know anybody who's real comfortable with where we're at right now.
We'll also hear from a 21-year-old in Winnipeg who explains why she's a vegetarian and why some in her generation are turning away from meat.
But I was getting a lot of information about like environmental impacts of eating meat, and like that was really concerning to me. And I knew that, you know, just me not eating meat isn't going to change the world, but it almost brought me a little bit of comfort, as if I was doing something for my own well-being, let alone the well-being of others.
And lastly, Bruce Burnett of Glacier Markets Farm joins us to discuss seeding progress and other news from the commodity markets.
Get a jump on the season without interest slowing you down. Join FBN now through August 10th and apply for 0% financing on purchases made during your first 30 days and pay no interest until 2022. To learn more about how you can sign up and lock in your 0% rate, go to FBN.com. Financing provided by Farm Credit Canada. By applying for credit through FCC, you can send to FBN providing your information to FCC or its designated third-party service providers. Not all applicants will qualify. Only available to new transacting FBN members in Canada, excluding Quebec.
First up on today's show, cattle producers in the eastern prairies have a serious water problem. Dugouts on pasture land are either half full or nearly empty, water quality is poor, and some ranchers are already hauling water to their farm. Ryder Lee, Executive Director of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association, joins us now to describe the situation in his province. Hey Ryder, thanks for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, glad to.
So, as most folks in the eastern prairies know, it's been, you know, an extremely dry period for months, little snowfall, very little rain this spring. Can you sort of describe the situation in parts of Saskatchewan when it comes to water supplies on cattle ranches? How severe is it? Are we talking like hundreds of producers being affected by this? What is the situation?
It's all of them, I think. You know, there's over 12,000 cattle producers in Saskatchewan, and I haven't talked to anybody who's comfortable with the moisture situation. I've been talking to somebody from an area, you know, west of Prince Albert, who's talking about hauling water, and that area is generally challenged by too much rain too often. So, no, I don't know anybody who's real comfortable with where we're at right now.
So it's not just like a southern Saskatchewan, southeast Saskatchewan thing. This is a widespread, large problem.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. You know, usually, I've said over the years, you know, we all take turns. And one year, you know, I'm dealing with this challenge that you dealt with 3 years ago, you know, 2 hours down the road. But right now, if you're short on feed, where do you go shopping for it? You got to go a long way to find anybody that even has some extra that would sell it, let alone at what price it is. And you need the water to go with that too. So there'll be parts where people are not able to graze because they don't have water or because they don't have the grass.
So I guess what I've heard is that, you know, this is not just about water quantity. I mean, it's also an issue of quality. You may have some water in your pasture dugout, but, you know, if that water is loaded with, like, total dissolved solids or, you know, has other issues, right, that's not helpful either, because you don't want cattle getting sick. So how concerning is that bit, the quality part?
Big. And for quite a few years and quite a few places, you know, it's chemistry. As your tub gets less water in it, then there's more of the other stuff, and that goes for dugouts too. So we've had water quality challenges in lots of parts of the province for several years now. I'd say this is probably about our fifth year in a row of moisture challenges. This is just the most widespread one. And, you know, the ministry has done a good job of having testing resources and learning more about that. You know, SCA's funding research around ways to purify or, you know, improve the quality of water. There's all kinds of activity taking place, but we still need the rain to recharge those places.
So I guess the question is, as you describe, this is not new. I mean, there have been many years in the past when there's been water challenges for cattle producers because of drought or whatever. I mean, what are some of the long-term solutions here? Do we need better infrastructure, like in terms of like water pipelines, more support for producers to dig wells? Like, what needs to be done bigger picture so that we don't have continuous repeats of this over the next, you know, 20, 30 years?
Well, work's been going on and continues to. And, you know, it's hard in probably 2013 when everything's wet to plan for 2021 when everything's not. But a lot of that has been going on. One of the biggest and most picked up programs from the Ministry of Agriculture is the Farm and Ranch Water Infrastructure Program. And there's a cost share program there to build your water resources, to build your resilience and to do things like, you know, pipe water over there so you've got a better grazing setup, or, you know, several different ways of, yeah, building that water plan for to be more able to adapt. But, you know, even with a good plan, it still needs to come from the sky and recharge some of the things. And you know, you build your tools that will help you get through some short-term challenges. But it's been a lot of years in a row where all of a sudden, yeah, well, I did all this project to pull that water, distribute it over these several places and make it work better, but that place that I plan to pull from is dry now.
Right.
So people are working on it and have done a lot and continue to. The other challenge has been profitability. You know, you need profits to reinvest in your place, and that hasn't been there. We've had summers and falls where we're buying expensive feed because our places didn't grow the amount that we thought we would to get through winter. So that money you might have put into that project to improve the resilience of your operation goes into buying feed so the operation survives.
Right. So I spoke with some folks in North Dakota last week they sort of described the situation down there. They're also having problems with water quality and water quantity on ranches. And some cattle are already going to market there because producers just feel they don't have the water or the forage to, you know, carry the cattle throughout the summer. What do you expect over the next few months in Saskatchewan? Will we see more cattle going to market?
Well, it all depends on the rain, but absolutely, Robert, that's what happens. You fit your livestock to the resources that you have for them, and that's both feed and water. And we've seen it before where, you know, like I said, when it's normal times, when, you know, you're in a pocket of drought, you might even ship those cattle to another part of the province where people have been having a good run and they have the extra grazing and they'll summer there. I see less of that happening this year just because of how widespread it is. You might haul water, you might buy feed, but some of those things aren't at hand or aren't, you know, just don't pencil out. They don't make sense, you know, with the high price of grain and feed and everything. There'll be
people that look at the math and say, yeah, we're gonna reduce some of the cow herd here and match it with what we've got for resources to get through the year.
Okay. Last one. So you mentioned the provincial program Saskatchewan that, you know, has provided a lot of help for producers to build up their infrastructure so they have more secure water supplies. Is there other things that need to be done to assist producers in the now? Like, what needs to happen in the next weeks or months to help producers get through this, you know, this 2021 situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, we did a lot of lobbying to restore agri-stability by getting rid of the reference margin limit. That helped. So you know, people need to take a look at that. The farm and ranch, or the forage rainfall insurance program, you know, that deadline has come and gone, but I know a lot of people opted into that maybe haven't in the past. That's something that was good that came to pass. You know, there's something that we've asked of the federal government is to make a change on what's called the livestock tax deferral program, to make that something that producers can trigger so that, you know, you've downsized your herd temporarily and you plan to get back in. So this program allows you to defer the tax on that downsizing so you're not paying tax, and then when you buy back in, well, you'd be able to offset that, well, allow that to defer. But they just announced that for last year, last week, and that doesn't help.
Right? So that sort of thing needs to be more timely. It has to happen more rapidly.
100%. We think it should be in producers' hands to trigger that rather than the federal finance ministers. So we continue on that to make that a tool that's at hand, not an accommodation that might come to pass.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Ryder. Thanks for coming on Between the Rows this week. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Ryder Lee, Executive Director of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association. Next up, research from Dalhousie University shows that 31% of Canadians under the age of 35 are thinking about cutting beef from their diet. Many in that age group are turning completely away from meat and becoming vegetarians. One of those young Canadians is Mila Froelich, a 21-year-old from Winnipeg, who stopped eating meat in high school. I spoke with Mila in early May to find out why she became a vegetarian.
I would say probably when 2017, I would have been in high school, maybe around like the summer months, I would have just graduated. I think in the news at that time, less so now because every news outlet, at least most of what I read, is COVID-based, but I was getting a lot of information about like environmental impacts of eating meat, and like that was really concerning to me. And I knew that, you know, just me not eating meat isn't going to change the world, but it almost brought me a little bit of comfort, as if I was doing something for my own well-being, let alone the well-being of others. I also didn't eat that much meat to begin with. Like within family dinners, we'd have meat, you know, we'd have a vegetable, some salad, some sort of grain, and then, you know, a chicken breast or pork or steak occasionally, or hamburgers or hot dogs or whatever it was. But that's not something I would have prepared for myself.
Okay. So just for sake of clarity, when you say different media sources, so kind of what is your sort of go-to media sources? Where do you get your information from?
I think I get most of my information from social media, you know, like sources like Twitter, and then I do follow like CBC and CTV and those global news. So just articles I would have read or come across kind of naturally. You know, your phone's catered to you. So those are the things that I look at. So those are the kind of the information brought to my attention right away.
Okay.
As I did get a bit older, I've taken like in university courses. some food and nutrition courses and kind of understood a bit more background behind vegetarianism.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, I don't think it wasn't really like a well-researched, it wasn't something I well-researched or you like dove deep into. I was kind of like, this is what I'm going to do. And I just did it.
So just for the sake of clarifying that, it sounds like these articles provoke sort of an emotional response saying, you know, what I'm doing now by eating meat is perhaps bad for the planet. I don't want to be part of the problem. I want to be part of the solution. Is that a way of putting it?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I'd say maybe it was a bit fear-based too, like fear-mongering almost. Like, it's like, oh my gosh. Yeah, like exactly what you just said there. Being concerned, and this is like the small thing that I can do that will kind of bring me almost some inner peace. Like I'm not contributing to this problem anymore.
And how would you define the problem? Like, how would you describe it?
Just people, individuals, carbon footprints, water usage that goes into meat production, I'd say. I was also concerned at the time of like chemicals. I understand that there are, you know, chemicals in plant-based foods as well, but chemicals that go into meat and like the treatment of animals. I'd seen a few documentaries at the time probably that had kind of sparked something in my heart that made me feel upset in terms of how animals were being treated, because, you know, I have a pet dog and I wouldn't want to see that my dog being treated that way.
Okay.
I have a faint memory of watching this might sound kind of silly, but a cow playing fetch that showed up on my social media for a really long time. It was kind of like an ongoing occurrence. It's like, oh my gosh, like truly this is, you know, an animal that plays and enjoys life and those kind of things.
Mila, of course, is just one Canadian, and many 21-year-olds continue to eat meat. But within Mila's peer group, nearly half are vegetarians or vegans.
Say I had a group of 10 friends, I would say half of them are either vegan or vegetarian, whether that be for health reasons. I have a few friends in environmental studies or just caring about like animals. A few of them made the switch in high school, and then as they've gotten older as well, they switched to like a vegetarian lifestyle or just reducing their meat consumption overall. Like some still do eat meat, or they might not eat, they might only eat chicken, they won't eat pork or beef just for health reasons or ethical concerns they have.
So just for the sake of my understanding, if you have like say 20 people in your social circle, you know, some are close friends, not so close, friends of friends or whatever, you would say half of them are either vegetarians or vegans?
Yeah, I would say so. Maybe not quite half, maybe I'd say closer to 9 out of 20, but like just looking at my immediate friend group and those who I associate with, it would be a higher proportion than it would have been when we were a lot younger. Okay. I've had a few friends who've been vegetarian their entire life. They're East Indian, so that's like a cultural reasoning.
Right.
But when I was growing up, this one friend was the only friend who I knew who was vegetarian. No one was vegetarian in my immediate kind of demographic.
So you witnessed a change like in the last 5-10 years?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So I guess this goes back to the question of, is there something that farmers, the livestock industry can do differently that would convince you to maybe try meat again?
I think personally, probably not, just because I've eliminated it from my diet for the time, like for a while now, and I've adapted quite a bit in that regard. I do like seeing like I have no issues with individuals eating meat. However, when it's provided from like a locally sourced farm or like there's background to provide like ethical caregiving towards the animals, that would probably increase the likelihood if I were to, you know, revert back to non-vegetarianism.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say that's like a, even if, you know, a farmer approached me and said, all of my meat is ethical, everything, like the animals are treated very well, I do everything in my power to reduce emissions and so forth. It's, you know, no antibiotics, no growth hormones, no growth hormones, no chemicals. I still don't think that would make me want to switch back.
Mila and other Canadians may firmly believe that livestock are bad for the planet, but she has never heard the livestock industry side of the story, that cattle, sheep, and other livestock provide environmental benefits. You may have heard that livestock are bad for climate change, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you know, cattle and other livestock actually do provide some environmental benefits, such as improving soil health, perhaps maintaining, you know, some natural ranch land areas where many species can live, whether it be coyotes or, you know, skunks or whatever sort of thing. So that those lands are kind of important to species and wildlife other than just cattle. So therefore, the logic, the argument they want to make is that actually, if you look at the big picture, you know, cattle and livestock are actually offer some benefits to the environment. What do you think when you hear that argument?
I think that's a very good thing. Like I truly have not heard that from any news source or friend or course that I've taken. I think that's like an underemphasized, like something that I haven't heard, and that is a positive outlook.
So that message actually might have some resonance or have some connection with people, you think?
Yes, I do think that would be the case. I don't think people know that, or I don't think that information has been provided to my demographic.
Okay. All right.
That frequently. I think just in general, I know we're focusing on like food and so forth, but just trying to be more ethical in general between my like friendships, whether that's clothing that we purchase or food that we consume, we're always... the back of our brains are kind of thinking like, oh shoot, I want this planet to be here if I choose to have children, if I choose to have grandchildren, and I don't want them to be living in a world of kind of shambles. So if I can do this small thing that makes me feel slightly better, that will make me, you know, a bit more content in my life.
Been listening to Mila Froelich, a 21-year-old university student in Winnipeg, who explained why she became a vegetarian. Finally, soil moisture and the lack of it has been a major challenge this spring for thousands of producers on the prairies. Bruce Burnett is the Director of Markets and Weather Information with Glacier Markets Farm. He's here now to talk about soil moisture conditions, how much rain is needed on the prairies, and the latest news from the commodity markets. Hey, Bruce, thanks for coming on the podcast. Always appreciate it.
That's good to be here.
So, as we all know, it's been exceptionally dry, a lot of talk of problems with soil moisture, a lot of growers seeding into dust in kind of the eastern prairies. And as we record this, it's Tuesday afternoon, and I think it's about 27, 28 outside and very low humidity. But there is some rain in the forecast. What are you expecting over the next week?
Well, we're certainly going to see a pattern shift on the eastern prairies. Colorado low is going to move through the area essentially starting on Thursday through the weekend, and should provide a fairly good coverage of precipitation. amounts fluctuate from model run to model run in the forecast models, but we're basically looking at anywhere between half an inch to an inch and a half, 2 inches of moisture, depending on your location, stretching from central Saskatchewan all the way across into Manitoba. And again, the forecasts are a little bit inconsistent in terms of exactly where we're going to get this rainfall, but it does look like it's an encouraging system. Certainly the best system that we've had so far on the Eastern Prairies this spring for its ability to maybe deliver us some much needed moisture.
Okay. So, I mean, 2 inches would be a lot more helpful than, say, you know, a half inch for a lot of growers. I was speaking to a North Dakota climatologist last week who told me that he feels that we need, you know, above normal rainfall for most of the growing season to kind of keep crops growing. How do you see the situation? Is our soil moisture that desperate that we need continued consistent rainfall for the next, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks to kind of keep the crop going? Or how do you assess the situation?
Yeah, no, we certainly do need consistent rainfall this growing season. I don't think there's any question about that. Our subsoil moisture reserves in eastern Saskatchewan and most of Manitoba really are quite a bit below what we would normally have this time of year. So there's really no reserve that we have to withstand the days, you know, like today where it's in the upper 20s, low 30s, and low humidity and lots of wind. So it's certainly one of those things where we're not only going to see this rainfall, but again, within the next couple of weeks, we'll need to see another one that looks like about the same amounts. In terms of precipitation, if any places that receive less than half an inch from the system, it's probably not going to be that useful. So again, that's where it's critical, you know, as we move in here, that we see this develop further and hopefully give us the needed moisture that we need. Again, I think just the mere fact that we're going to get some rain here, I think, is a good thing. The fortunate part for us right now is that the crops are basically planted. There has been some emergence, but really the moisture demands by the crop are quite a bit less right now than, let's say, they will be in about 3 or 4 weeks. So we can get away maybe with some lesser amounts right now, but we certainly will need to see that pick up as we move into the month of June. And again, that's assuming that these forecasts are accurate, that we are going to get this rainfall this weekend.
Okay. So just looking ahead to June then, I mean, my knowledge is fairly limited, but what I do know is that June is typically the wettest month in the Eastern Prairies. So if we get a, you know, a normal June, if there is such thing as a normal June anymore, you know, that should keep crops moving along and growers should be in okay shape.
Well, yeah, it depends on when you get the rainfall though too, Robert. Like the, if we got our normal amount in the last day of June, that would be far too late.
Right.
So,
right.
We need to see some even distribution. Again, as we said, you know, every 10 days or so, we need to see some substantial rains move through, or else we're going to see the crops take a leg backwards here. And again, we need to see rainfall in that half an inch to inch range every 10 days in order to, you know, hit those normal precipitation amounts even. So certainly it is a... It's an order not only for precipitation, but also we need to have the timing quite consistent this growing season.
Last one for you, Bruce. So I was talking to a producer in Saskatchewan recently, and he kind of brought up, you know, the late 80s, kind of that 1988 period where we had like a very severe drought. Does this, the situation we're in right now, remind you of that at all, or is it different? How would you compare it?
Well, I think up till now, it's been fairly reminiscent of 1988 here on the Eastern Prairies. We're certainly that dry as we were back then. In 1988, we were a little bit warmer in May than we were this year. Again, you know, we're supposed to cool down here with the arrival of this rain on the weekend. We're going to see high temperatures across the prairies and dip back into the low teens, even single digits for a few days. So we're maybe not quite as hot as we were back in 88, but certainly we were quite as dry. Of course, in 88, we didn't pick up much moisture between essentially the 1st of April and the 1st of July. So if we do get these rains here, and that certainly does remind me. One of the interesting things of 1988, one of the things that's interesting is in 1988, Alberta did receive some better rainfall, and that's been the pattern so far this spring. We've seen some better rains out in Alberta, parts of western Saskatchewan, than we have on the eastern side of the prairies.
Okay. All right, Bruce. Well, thanks as always. I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Bruce Burnett, Director of Markets and Weather Information with Glacier Markets Farm. That's it for this week's show. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
Get a jump on the season without interest slowing you down. Join FBN now through August 10th and apply for 0% financing on purchases made during your first 30 days and pay no interest until 2022. To learn more about how you can sign up and lock in your 0% rate, go to FBN.com. Financing provided by Farm Credit Canada. By applying for credit through FCC, you consent to FBN providing your information to FCC or its designated third-party service providers. Not all applicants will qualify. Only available to new transacting FBN members in Canada, excluding Quebec.